I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 340 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Welcome to episode 412 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Do we have any annoncements other than we're here recording?
Or Graham McTavish
while being
just got
live
married
in our Facebook group, making all kinds of fun things
Graham McTavish
happen
just got
in
married
front of everybody.
Graham McTavish just got married. Congratulations.
How old is she?
Oh, I don't know, but she looked very young.
He went for like a, oh, she's young. Yeah.
She's not that young. Like, she looks like she's probably in her 40s, maybe late 30s.
Oh, who cares? That I thought it was like 20 something.
I mean, it's still younger than him. Still,
yeah.
It would still be
well,
half,
a lot of other people,
you know,
younger
close
than
to
him.
Half his age. That's okay.
I mean, that's kind of an announcement.
The
that's
pictures
a personal
are pretty.
Thing.
Well, I mean, it's something new that happened in the Outlander world, so it's not worth mentioning.
I mean, it's tangential, but it's not like show announcement or actor,
no.
Like actor. Oops, sorry, I just booped it. So anything else? Since we've last recorded, has there been anything announced?
They're done filming Outlander.
That's true. That's happened in the last, 2 weeks or so?
So
they're done filming season 7.
Yeah.
And
they
no
should really call it
6.5, 7.
It should be 6.5.
I'm fine
7.
With that.
Just because they didn't finish 6.
They have not given us a date, though. So we're still waiting for that.
Yes, that is true.
And once we get that, we may accelerate.
But until then, it's just going to be my name in the year. Until then. Until then, it's just going to be summer 2023. Which means maybe I have the secrets.
So this episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Annabelle E. To find out more about what the heck that means, we'll have a little bit more at the end on our closeout, sign out. Whatever. Outro. She is a co-producer on our Patreon. And speaking of Patreon, this episode is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. And okay, let me say up front, I know I put it in the description, but I forgot to say it before I hit record. So here we go. So those of you listening on your podcast app as the podcast, you're going to go, what the heck? This is actually not for you, but that's okay. Cause things happen. We are doing for the first time ever a live recording, meaning we're recording as we normally do while also broadcasting live on Facebook in our group. So you get to see the video. I mean, I guess behind the scenes, whatever that's worth. So people are commenting, and I asked before we started recording, you know, I was kind of chatting with them. Summer and I were chatting. And the plan, however, is once we hit record, we are going to start the episode proper, which we have. This is hopefully the only interruption. Unplanned interruption. But basically what we're going to do, because this is a book read along. So what we're doing is discussing a chapter, and then Summer, in future Summer, it may have to be me today because of the way we have it on Facebook. But one of us will be looking at comments and seeing what people want to say or have said about either replying to us or about the chapter, what they liked, what they didn't like, whatever they want to say. So we will not be monitoring comments while we're doing the actual discussion part, because it will take us out of what we're doing. And the episode then, the audio episode will be, but anyway, so we don't, but we don't want to ignore you. So we'll start, do the announcements, do the whatever, and then start the first chapter. Summer will announce it as usual. And then at the end of the chapter, before we start the next one, in the future, Summer will do this. Today I may have to. We'll look at the comments on Facebook and interact for a few minutes anyway, and then go on to the next chapter. Okay, so that is just to tell you guys who are on Facebook, we're not ignoring you. I guess we are ignoring you, but it is the way, it's the way that we're able to do it and not make it super painful for our audio listeners. Because again, the whole intent or the whole point of this or the whole product has not changed. It will be an audio podcast. So we're happy to have in the interaction. We just want to keep it to that, to the bit between chapters. Okie doke, Sam. It's all you.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we will be continuing our An Echo in the Bone read-along with, we're going to start with chapter number 9, entitled A Knife That Knows My Hand.
So, Jamie and Claire, as we left them in chapter 8, they are on the way, they're making plans, right? They're on their way to Scotland. Or they're getting ready to be on their way to Scotland. While most of the gold was with the Spaniard, the small group, meaning Jamie, Claire, Ian, was also carrying a decent amount of it on them. And I think the most impressive way that they're carrying it with them is how they made it into shot pellets or into shot. And we don't get a ton of detail here. We find out later. It's not a spoiler, I don't think. They make it into to look like shot, and then they cover it in charcoal, in coal dust, I don't know, cover it in something to make it black. And so it looks like a black shot.
I hope they don't ever confuse them with the actual ones.
Oh my.
I'd be really
actually
pissed
thought about
if
that.
I,
like,
if
what
I blew
if I put
my
one
life
in here
savings
and I,
like that?
If I tried to shoot it, would it just melt it? And like I'd have gold ooze out of the side of my gun? Like or would it even shoot?
I think it would shoot because.
But it would maybe splatter?
Maybe, because I don't know the temperature of a flintlock musket thing. I don't know how hot
of the how
hot
the
musket
gets.
Would be, or the rifle would be, and then mm-hmm. we'd have to combat that or compare that to the liquid temperature of gold, the temperature of liquid gold, the melting point. Yeah, the melting point.
Then the other part of the chapter basically is Jamie gives Claire the knife that he'd made for her. and he had sharpened the knife, yes, but specifically he had formed the handle to fit her hand perfectly.
And of course he had to make it dirty.
What? I didn't say anything.
Jamie made it dirty.
Oh, I thought you said I had to. I'm like, what? I didn't say a word.
No. He. Are you he?
Yes.
No. Yeah. Okay.
That's, you guys got to understand. I will be a little ad hoc here. So it's not just the first time doing this. Summer and I don't normally record while looking at each other.
No.
So she's going to see more of me than me of her, because I'm looking down at my script and she's not.
She's looking
at me
not.
And laughing. And then I look up
sometimes.
When I hear her laugh. Okay. Say two.
That's literally all you were going to say about that chapter?
Yep.
There were so many things that happened in that chapter other than just that.
What important storyline related things? You can bring things up. I don't care. But I am trying, because we have so much to do and so much to talk about in so many chapters now and down the line. I am getting it down to the nitty gritty. But go for it.
Right. But I think at the very least you should have explained how he was able to carve that knife.
Oh, see, but that's
memory.
Related. That's not a
it
separate
is related,
point. It's related.
But it's
I leave those things for you because you like to get dirty.
Okay. I
Go
didn't realize that's what we were doing. No, he's...
That's what I'm doing.
Because I was confused at first when I was listening to the chapter and they were talking about the knife, because I heard him say, you have to give me money. You have to pay for a knife so that it knows its master.
That's interesting, yeah.
And then at that point, I was like, ooh, where did he buy this from? Did he buy it from somebody and now he's making her pay him for it so that it's the money's been moved? Mm-hmm. And then I listened more and I was like, oh, no, he made that knife. And then she kept remarking on how perfectly it fit her hand. And then finally she asked him, how did you make this so perfectly fit my hand? And he said, I felt your hand around my cock enough to know what your grip is like, basically. And I was like, ha, that's funny. Funny. And you can't really tell anybody else that after that. That's kind of like just a personal commentary between the two of you.
Yeah, you can't really describe how your husband did such a great job on his handle.
Correct. Moving right along, apparently very right along, to chapter 10 entitled entitled Fireship.
I forgot what this meant at first, and then really quickly in the chapter, I was like, oh, it's that chapter. Okay. So this is interesting only because not because it necessarily means anything right away, but in the next chapter, I'll remark on it again, and you'll see. And then the next chapter after that, you'll see like how odd this is, because it's not something we see all that commonly, but it's interesting. So this chapter, we get, you guys know if you listen to our show, I always make a, not a big deal, but I make a deal about of any dates we get, because we don't get a lot of them, or we don't always get them. So date and place. So this is in New York. August 1776. We are back with William.
Yeah, you didn't check the comments during chapters, between chapters.
Oh my God. There's two things I didn't do. A whole bunch of stuff. Okay, first thing I apologize. Okay, pause. So the first thing we need to do is go back to the comments that I was copying and pasting. Chapter 9, Kate O shared. They are making preparations to head back to Scotland, a journey I'm sure they never really thought that they would take, even though Jamie says he promised to take Ian back. He hasn't exactly made an effort to until now, when this trip is necessary, or at least he thinks it's necessary. Kate says, I do love the banter that has developed between Jamie and Claire and Ian, as Ian has come into his own and Jamie really recognizes him as a man. Does he slip into protective uncle paternal figures sometimes? Absolutely. But there always seems to be a bit of dry humor amongst the trio. I'd agree with that. And finally, Jamie's explanation at knowing her grip for the handle of the knife elicited a small cackle from me the first time, and it didn't fail the second. It's a very Jamie and Claire moment, if you know what I mean, as is the small, intimate blood vow. Now, to keep our promise, we are going back to you guys. steamrolled that. Okay. Oh, wrong way. Come on now. Now, there may not be anything. Let's see. Brooke, is this when they're still there? Oh, yeah. No, they're going at it. Can I make a bigger? Oh, nope. Sorry. It's not really easy to see either. Sorry, you guys. I am trying to find where they start. Oh, okay. Now we're back to like weather. So, sorry, that was funny. Charlotte said, I appreciate the podcast all the more if this is the stuff you go through. No, we don't. It's only because this is our first time doing it with and having to worry about Facebook. So don't worry about it. It's all us. It's all good. Sorry, I'm trying to find comments.
I mean, we're multitaskers, but
so Elizabeth says,
we're still learning this one.
I was going to mention that. I don't know what she meant. Like I said, we're not looking at the timestamps or anything. Well, we don't have timestamps. So, okay, this is another thing we probably should say. If there's something you want to comment on, be specific about what it was. Don't just say, oh, that's funny. You can do whatever you want, but we won't know what you're talking about. Oh, sorry. They're talking about Graham McTavish. People are saying, man, my throat. I saw that. They looked so lovely. He is a gray fox. So, agreed. A gray fox? Silver fox? Maybe silver fox.
I guess it depends on the light.
Elizabeth says season 6B/7.
Yeah, exactly.
Or 6.5. Let's see. Good morning. How the sausage? Joe writes, good morning. Looking forward to see how the sausage gets made until I have to go to church. I mean, this sausage. The sausage is real rough today, guys. No, it's not rough. It's just new. Ignore away. So she laughed at us when I said, we may have to ignore you. She's like, go for it. Okay, I don't know what that is. Sorry, you guys. I'm trying to go through this. Oh, Charlotte says, Diana admits she's not good with dates. That's okay. I'm not even commenting on Diana. I am saying when we get a date, I like cleave onto it because we don't get that many. Ooh, and now I'm, okay, that's done. How many episodes in season 7? 16. Okay, that's all I got. Let's go back to chapter 10. So summer already started, so I'm going to pop back in. New York, August 1776. We're with William. He's returned to the British camp after getting lost and all the stuff that happened last chapter. General Howe has moved his troops to New York, which had been abandoned. The site. We learn a new term for that the soldiers had for women. Because they're looking for, like, here, we, I don't think they won, but they got to a place that had been abandoned. So now they're like, we should rejoice. We should enjoy the spoils of war. And I learned the word flesh pot. It's gross, but very specific.
You just learned that?
Descriptive. Yeah. I mean, I've read the book before, but I didn't retain it. I don't call people flesh pot. So if I don't, unless I use it or see it a lot, I'm not going to remember it.
It is so descriptive, though. I don't even know why it would be
descriptive. Of course it's descriptive.
It, by itself.
Of course it is.
Makes it very clear what it is just by the name of it.
I agree with you. I'm just saying I don't remember hearing it.
Well, that and they have a lot of like male toys now that are called like fleshlights. So it's just, you know, light instead of pot. I'm just saying.
I know what you're saying. You know, I don't need to hear any more about those nasty things. And if that's your, if that floats your boat, go for it. I don't want to hear it. William is about to read and then write some letters. So he's got a few that he needs to go through. And one is from his cousin Dottie, who had never written to him before. One is from his Uncle Hal, telling him his cousin Adam is in New York. His Aunt Minnie has given him some things for him, from Adam to give to William. He speaks ill of Captain Ezekiel Richardson. Quote, John says you are doing something for Captain Richardson. I know Richardson, and I think you shouldn't. Unquote. Well, that's ominous. Now we go, or he goes, on to John's letters. The things that his, and, that, and that's it. We don't get much detail there. He goes to visit Adam to pick up the things that he was supposed to pick up. And the things that his cousin Adam had for him were a book, a bottle of Spanish sherry, a quart of olives, and three pairs of silk stockings. The book was a catalog of the charms, specialties, price, and availability of the best flesh pots or whores in London. He drinks with his cousin and other men as they enjoyed perusing through the book. He finds himself happy and drink. They go out, they're out and about, and they end up hanging out in a literal red light district. But William kind of continues on. He vomits in a doorway. He staggers on.
Gets beaten by the owner.
And Adam is now, who would stay back, who was with the other dudes, Adam is now looking for him. But apparently, in the little bit of time he's been away, he's already been in and out of a woman. So there you go. Then they hear shouting down the street, and they head towards it. Some men had dragged a half-naked woman, or were dragging her out to the street. They heard someone say the word fireship. And the other whores there, the other women, were scared. They stayed back. No one came out to help this woman who had been brought out, dragged out. The fireship woman was being punched in her stomach and breasts. William starts forward.
Like,
1 second.
I just have a question. Is there like a historical story behind this? Or did this literally just come from the twisted mind of Diana Gabaldon? Them lighting this whore on fire.
I don't know. Like, it would not surprise me if there's some, I'm positive there's something similar to it in history. There has to be, because not that she's not inventive. She is very inventive. But it's, if there's a name for something like that, I mean, it has the word fire in it. It wouldn't surprise me if that had already happened or had happened in history. So.
I didn't like this part of the chapter.
Nah. William starts forward. Again, he's moved to help in some fashion, but Adam pulls him back. We learn, or the reader learns, that a fireship was a poxed whore. So the man who'd been attacking her grabbed a lantern, broke it, and threw the burning oil all over her. And as I said, no one was coming out to help her. She's screaming and burning and everything. Adam tells him, look, William, we need to go. William, however, can't do nothing. He goes up to the man who'd thrown, who'd thrown the lantern or the oil on the woman. He had also taken a stone and thrown it up, like, I think, up toward the building. And William goes over to him and shoves his head against the doorpost, and the man collapses. And William yells at all of the men to leave. The woman, unfortunately, does not survive. She is now a lump of char. And as they leave the scene, he notes that both he and his cousin were crying.
Do you always do the hand motions when you
record? Absolutely. What have I done? I didn't do that.
He was like, he throws the rock.
I'm like, I'm not doing basketball. What are you talking about? Oh, sorry. I just missed my mic.
No, it's just.
Yes, I'm very animated. You know me. Okay. Why would I be different in person?
Yeah, but I don't watch you.
No, you watched me when last night.
I don't know.
Night,
I don't watch together. You I talk when with you my record. Hands. I know you do in person. I didn't know you did it when you didn't have an audience.
Of course I do. It's not about an audience. It's about expression. Now, okay, I will say this. If I'm talking to myself in the mirror, no. No. That's weird. Okay. No listener comments or no comments sent in for 11. No, sorry, for 10. So let's go to the Pupla. Okay, peeps. Okay, 16. I live in New York, so it was kind of cool to have Fort Ticonderoga in the book. Oh, you know what? I bet living almost anywhere on the East Coast, it would be fascinating to read these books because they're just either in your backyard or you've heard of them.
I remember when I was reading The Fiery Cross, I went to North Carolina to visit my friend during the summer, and all of the places named after Tryon and all of the other things, I was just like, I feel like I'm actually in Outlander right now. So funny.
Oh, back up here. Elizabeth says, it was funny to reread this part, realizing what was probably in the letter. Yes, in the letter from Dottie. Brooke says, a fleshpot refers to a brothel, not the specific lady. Oh, fleshpot. That makes sense too.
I can see
Charlotte says,
point is you know what, there's whores. You know it's got to be about ladies some way.
Charlotte says, she agrees. Diana probably read something about a pox tour. Okay, and that's it. And then we're off.
Moving right along to chapter 11, entitled Transverse Lie.
So this is where I'm going to bring up the date again. She gives us a date and a month here. Or not a date. A month and a year. The chapter we just finished, chapter 10. You remember the date I gave you, Sam?
Of course not.
Of course not. New York, August. The where doesn't matter. It's the when. August 1776. Suddenly we're back with the Frasers on the Ridge, March 1777. So this is not wow. Exactly. This is not contemporaneous. This is back in the past.
So they've been talking about leaving and going to Scotland for how many months now?
I don't know how urgent it was before the house burned down, but the house burned down early January. Or in January. So it's been 3 months.
I know, but even in the last two chapters, but we just moved into the future.
We didn't have a date
the
two chapters ago.
Before the letters.
I would have to look at.
I know, but the assumption is that it had to happen before the dated chapter. The assumption is.
What had to happen? The house burning down?
No, all their conversations about leaving for Scotland. They haven't gone yet. There's still a baby about to be born in this chapter. So they have not. I'm just saying, if we've just jumped like 3 or 4 mm-hmm. months, they've been thinking about going to Scotland for probably more than almost a year at this point since the house burned down. But it's like,
no,
I didn't
ever realize
that it took that long for them
to
get their stuff
together. It hasn't been a year. It's March now. The house burned down in January, 2 or 3 months ago. If you're like, oh, I'm not too sure about that. They don't know where Archbug is. And the bug thing happened right after the house burned down, right? And the sow was under the...
Yes.
The sow was under the oven. Under the house. So we have a date. We're with the Frasers back on the ridge. March 1777. So this is an interesting thing. I'm going to basically repeat myself here. We just left William in August 1776, and we're back with the Frasers in March 1777. They haven't begun their trek east. They're still, as Summer said, they're still getting ready to begin it. The last thing Claire must do before they can leave is to deliver Lizzie of her second child. And she's worried about the boo. She's worried about the way the baby is lying transversely.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money. But nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
She's walking around, taking in the sights and sounds of the ridge. You never know when or if you'll ever be back. Jamie had appointed Bobby Higgins as his factor with responsibility of overseeing their property. Claire,
Since bees, I have a whole new appreciation for Amy. Mm-hmm. Because I honestly didn't even remember her character until bees. I guess I am that person who doesn't really care a lot about the side stories. Like I'm clearly reading them. I'm just not absorbing them in the way that I'm absorbing the stories that really impact the main four.
Claire gives Jamie and Ian a genetics lesson. Regardless of which man fathered any of Lizzie's children, they're identical twins. Their sperm is identical. Their kids will be full bro and sis.
Like, I get it. Describing genetics and DNA and all of those things would be too complex for their brains. But like now she's put it in their heads that she's examined both of their sperm and can tell that they're identical, which is a weird thing to have in anyone's head.
I think it's so cute that Jamie thinks his sending Joe away really meant that Joe went away. Well, that things like that made me laugh because, you know, you love Jamie, but you're special. Claire is ever ready for what she might have to do as a midwife. She's got knives and cord, whatever. She's ready to do whatever she needs to do to save the baby and or the mother.
She brought this sharp wire. Yeah. Ugh, I hated that description.
And two nights later, it is on like Donkey Kong. Joe has come for her. Claire walks. Claire's walk from the Higgins cabin to Lizzie's reminds me, it's not perfectly identical, absolutely not. But it reminds me a little bit of Jamie's walk and transformation from cave dweller to human, quote unquote, during his years in the cave when he'd go to and from Lallybroch, and Diana's description of him, how he changed from like more animal to human. So on her walk, she was not changing from animal to human, but it was snowing. As she looked back, she couldn't see the cabin behind her. So that was not only were they about to leave the ridge, but that was, you know, another, maybe not metaphor, but example of things, you know, things in her past being more and more distant or disappearing. And the night around her was full of mystery. The path that was in front of them, it looked unreal. And as it kind of meandered, it wasn't straight. It meandered around. And when it got too far off one side or the other, it would disappear into the shadows. Quote, I felt weirdly disembodied, caught between past and future. Nothing visible save the whirling white silence that surrounded me. Unquote. So while she wasn't transforming as Jamie had metaphorically, she was in a way changing or becoming even more so fully a warrior. So Jamie had said the prayer, "Oh, blessed Michael of the Red Domain," over her before she'd left. And here she is thinking it. Quote, it was the blessing given to a warrior going off to battle. Unquote. But he'd never done such a thing for her before. So that was a first. So that was different. Quote.
Well, but I bet he could tell that she'd been worried.
Heck of worried. Quote, if ever there were a night when angels walked, I prayed it might be this one. Unquote. It took them an hour to walk there.
I just spent the week snowed in Northern Going California. Nowhere. I can absolutely see
oh,
that
Lord, yes.
taking forever.
They arrive at the Beardsley cabin, and by the time they get there, it is daylight and the weather is like it's there may be snow around, but it's good weather. Like it's not currently snowing. It's not a blizzard condition. So Mr. Weems was supporting Kezi, which I find hysterical. They're outside because of course. Then Claire goes in. I don't know why I've laughed. Or maybe not. I don't know why I've not laughed before. I don't think I've laughed this before, but maybe it was the reading it and then taking it in and having to take notes and decide, do I want to include it or not? This just made me laugh. It's Frau, not Ute. Oh my. Mr. Weems, Mrs. Weems now. Mr. Weems' wife. Frau Auntie Monica. I don't ever remember. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but I don't remember having seen German mixed with Scots. Upon Claire's arrival, Frau Auntie Monica says, Gott bedanket, I? That makes me laugh. But hearing that together makes me laugh. So the baby was in some sort of breech position. She didn't know exactly what kind until she saw the first body part present itself. Lizzie is yelling in pain and Claire is setting up to prep for delivery. And as Lizzie is understandably in pain, she is hollering. And Claire tells her, don't overdo it, girl. Ease back.
She goes through all the steps, all of the emotions, the full range of emotions during this endeavor.
She says, quote, they're frightened, but they aren't idiots, unquote. And what does she see? It's a foot. So it is a baby, yes, but it's a foot. So then after much maneuvering, she gets a second leg and the baby comes out and it's a girl. The happy little family is cuddling up in their bed. The twins leave, understandably, because Mr. Weems is like, there's like kind of a truce there, but like, let's not push it. Mr. Weems comes in to see his newest grandchild. Back at the cabin, Jimmy is unable to sleep. So he says endless rosaries. He goes out. Yes, I just saw. You can't see me doing. You're missing most of my hand movements because they're below my neck.
You're right.
He cannot sleep, so he says endless rosaries. He goes outside and walks around the ridge, thinking of all the places of sanctuary he'd had. The ridge was one. A church here, a church there, like all these different places. He'd made his way. He ended up at the Beardsley cabin. He sees Mr. Weems being brought in, and he realizes that the baby had come. And that means that Claire had come through her trial safely as well, and she was free. They could leave the ridge. A little later, when Claire comes out of the cabin and Jamie meets her on the path, they quickly go over to the barn and do the deed.
They sure do it a lot.
I mean, it's book seven. If you don't know by now, you're hopeless.
I know, but like with always with an ulterior motive implied, like, oh, we're just going to stay warm.
I mean,
one more reason.
Sure. It works, I guess. I mean, okay, it works. Let me see. Okay, back to the people. I'm back on Pox Horse. That was last chapter. Elizabeth writes, the first part of the book messes with my head as John and William's stories and Jamie and Claire's stories are happening. Yeah, it's especially when we get to London, well, which is next. It's still, yeah, all or no, at the end of our selection of chapters. But yeah, it's these times, we're used to being all over the place geographically, but it's the times that freak
but
kind of
usually
freak
only
out.
Two places at a time.
Yeah. Claire. Charlotte writes, Claire didn't examine the sperm. It was just a nod to us readers.
That is true.
Oh, Oh, let me see more. Sorry. Yes. Yeah, she's right. So Elizabeth is right. Jamie and Claire's story is happening at a different time. This part of the story is happening at a different time than the part of the story of William and or John that we're reading about as well. Absolutely.
Which probably feeds to my dislike of William at this stage.
Because you're annoyed by the bouncing around?
I'm annoyed by the bouncing around, and I don't really care for his character yet. I appreciate him more in future books.
Okay.
Next, we will be reading chapter 12, entitled Enough.
Claire takes leave of places on the ridge, the spring house, the garden. She could see the gathering of horses and mules and people getting ready for their departure, but Claire wasn't ready. She steps into the woods to pull herself together, where Adso finds her, brushes up against her. And she knew he'd be okay. He'd hunt in the woods, and Amy would care for him in bad weather, bring him inside. She picked him up, feeling his soft fur and his purr, and says her goodbye, puts him back down. He hesitates for a bit and then vanishes. And that is when,
Would you have been able to do that, Ginger?
What? Let a cat go?
Leave your cats like that?
F your mother. What are you talking about? Never on a million planets.
I'm just saying. I mean, you do it every other year when you go to Scotland, but only for like a week.
A week? When have we ever been gone for a week?
When we go to Scotland?
We have not been gone for a week. 2 weeks.
Right, but I said a week or two.
2 weeks. It's never one. But yes. But that's not leaving forever. She left, not forever, but for, well, not to spoil, but years.
Foreseeable future.
And here is where she loses it. So I'm going to add here, well, it's not much for me to add. Wasn't really needed for me to add because actually Diana like adds it in later. But I realized here that her tears ain't about that cat. I mean, maybe, yes, she'll miss Adso and what he symbolizes, you know, being on the ridge and family and all that.
Yeah. Ginger, he was just the catalyst.
Oh my God. Do you have a stand-in for next time?
Nope. Just dad jokes.
I'm going to add here that her tears, yes, are for the ridge, and yes, also for Adso and her friends and family. But it's also for so many things that that Jamie says later that she has not been able to cry for Malva, for what they've lost, the home, everything. Diana does not mention this, but I would think it's not at the top, maybe at the bottom of the pile, but who knows? Maybe a teensy bit of her older life. I mean, she already said goodbye to her old life when she came back for good. So it's maybe not so much that. But Frank may or may not be part of that. I totally understand if you think no, but who knows? But certainly for the Mackenzies, right? When for Roger and Brianna and the kids. But this kind of goodbye, while certainly possible, is about way more than a place or a lost home or a cat, right? It's all of that and more. And Jamie proves it. After she says, "Don't worry, he's only a cat," Jamie says, I know, but you couldn't have weeped for the bairns or the house or your wee garden or the poor dead lass and her bairn. But if you weep for your cheaty, you know you can stop," unquote. And how does he know that? Quote, "Because I cannae weep for those things either, Sassenach, and I haven't got a cat," unquote. She realizes that when Jamie prays, "Lord, let me be enough," he'd meant enough for her. And she tells him, "You're everything, always." And 1 hour later, they left the ridge.
What did they do in that hour?
That is between the pages that we'll never get. Not our business.
That's not our business?
Right. Only when Diana goes into it is it into our business. She didn't go into it. Not our business. Kate O. writes, "Claire finally breaking down upon finding Adso and saying her quick goodbye to him makes my heart and gut clench. I have my own Adso. Quite literally, he has come to embody his namesake." Oops. Okay, back to y'all. Oh, wrong way. Yes, Liz writes, the part with Azzo made me cry, and then wrote, Catalyst! Ha 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 ha. Summer, did you just flip me off?
No, I went.
I couldn't tell.
I pointed
Charlotte
at you.
Says, the weeping, that gets me every time. Absolutely. Well, it didn't get me this. You know, I think it's not that I don't get teary-eyed or emotional. Absolutely reading the books, 100%. It's that when I am reading, as I say, I know it's ad nauseum. When I'm doing this close reading to take notes, I kind of read it. Not scientifically, but I'm kind of removed. Like something may surprise me, or I may remember. Oh, that's funny. Like I'll laugh. I'm certainly moved, but I'm not really I'm not really, really, really emotionally affected when I'm reading it for this purpose because it's just words. And I'm trying to pick out what's the most important part and the least amount, but still that still carries enough meaning or storyline to bring to the show. Oh, Liz wrote tear prick. Yes, that's I didn't have one this time, but I usually have it. Louise writes, I have tears again just listening to you recap the ad so tears. Aw.
Yeah, every time you say tear prick, I'm just going to say sad penis.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to chapter 13, entitled Unrest.
It was night. All were abed. And by abed, I mean on the ground of some forest or something. Ian's pretty sure his aunt and uncle are making whoopee across the fire from him. He's tucked in with Rollo. Now remember, Ian is understandably worried about the disappearing of Archbug because he's a target. Jamie reminds him that Arch doesn't want him dead. Not yet, at least, right? He wants to see him suffer, which means he would like focus on or target the person or thing that Ian loves. So for now, he's safe enough. Or Jamie says, you're safe enough for now. I'm like, thanks, Uncle Jamie. That's great. But Ian has trouble.
Well, he doesn't really love anything else right
just,
now.
Just, I mean.
Other than Rollo.
His aunt, uncle, and Rollo.
And family. Yeah. Right. And then his cousins are also gone. Yeah. So Archbug can't get any of those people. So honestly, this is probably the safest that Ian has been. Ian and his family has been since the Archbug incident.
That's true. Probably safer than being on the ridge.
Yeah.
He has trouble sleeping because of this concern. He actually had meant to leave the ridge with JB and Claire, and then that first night when they settled in for sleep and to make camp, he'd actually meant to leave them, but he hadn't had the courage. He wonders if Arch would be able to follow them to Scotland, and he thinks, you know, it's really easy. It's like, you know, there's all kinds of woods here, all kinds of places to hide behind and slunk, whatever behind. In Scotland, it's not as, you know, depending on where you are, at least in the Highlands, it's not a lot. It's like, it's not flat land, but there's less to hide behind or in that's tall anyway. And people are always looking. He didn't say that they were nosy, but he was saying people always keep a lookout. So he believes he might be safe in Scotland, even if he ends up getting a wife in Scotland and staying there. He thinks he'll be safe enough staying there.
I'm just saying, if Archbug had the wherewithal to follow them to Scotland to continue to enact
his revenge,
I would have a newfound appreciation
for him,
for that sheer level of like tenacity. Like that would take it to a whole new level. Like it's not bad enough that he tortures them when he's near them, but to follow them to make sure that he's still near them to torture, that would have been extra.
Ian tries to settle on an image that he could get off to. First, he thinks Brianna. I was like, oh no, her father's right there. And then Malva.
Oh.
No. She was a scary bitch.
Do people willingly choose their cousins?
You're asking the wrong person.
I'm just saying, I don't have a single cousin that I would have
I'm
ever considered that.
I'm not even
going to
use the word cousin in a sentence with that. Absolutely no.
I'm like, never.
So Malva was a no.
You know the world is small and your community is small when that's all you
have. And we have a podcast. All it takes would be someone to listen and say, Summer and her cousin, no. But
ooh, I don't even care about that. If it were true, I'd be like, woo, but it's not. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, it's going to be a noise in a second because the feeder is going off and also the water. You can't hear the water, but the water, I need to fill up the water thing. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. So Malva was a no, but we, Mary, yes, she was safe. So he goes to town. Now, if you remember, trying to remember, like, who the heck is we, Mary? She was that whore in Edinburgh who had taken his virginity at the age of 50 at the brothel that Jamie had a room in. And Kate O writes, there's not too much to say about this chapter other than I really feel for Ian. He's been so tortured up to this point, and now he worries that he'll be endangered, a danger to his family and those people he loves most. It is a bit darkly humorous, I don't know how else to put it, that Ian is so in tune with his aunt and uncle's sexual activities and reactions to each other.
If you think about it, the most mastermindy that Bug could be is to make the threat and then
never
honestly just keep living his life and never touching and never doing anything, because then he's like, when is it going to happen?
That's not bad. That when? Is not wrong. That's not wrong.
All right. Then we are going to wrap. Nope. No, is that right? Are we wrapping? Is this 14?
No.
No, 13.
One more.
Okay. Yep. So we're 14? Mm-hmm. Okay. 14. This
See,
chapter
I told you it would not
that
be 3 hours.
We will be concluding. That's fine.
Not just you,
we are
everybody.
We're concluding this week's read along with chapter 14 entitled Delicate Matters.
A date again. London, November 1776. Back in time again. Back with Lord John. He is having breakfast with Lord George Germain. He's newly arrived, John, from America, and wants to share an encounter he'd had in North Carolina. Of course, it's his encounter with Percy Beauchamp. His intent was to mention it to Lord Germain and let it percolate there. So Lord Germain was Secretary of State for America, or I guess one of them, we find out. John had wanted to go to Lord North, who was above Lord Germain, but he had to follow protocol and play politics. So he'd next go see the other secretary, a Thomas Finn, with Beauchamp's Beauchamp's proposal. And if both men, you know, separately, took up the matter, it would absolutely come to Lord North's attention, and he would come to Grey. So that was his plan for now. He couldn't go straight to North because of politics and protocol. So the next scene, I believe, is John eating at his club. So he notices there was a new decoration in the dining room. It was a painting. And I think it was either a butler or a servant or someone who had welcomed him in and got him settled was Mr. Pitt. So Mr. Pitt had brought. John is in there. He notices the new painting. The person who is helping him, whoever that is, I don't know if we get a name, says a Mr. Pitt had brought a Mr. Joseph Brandt to dine the year before. So the year before would have been 1775. Brandt, we find out, was a Mohawk chief who had been to visit the king. Now, I don't have a lot of evidence. I mean, I didn't go back, and I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm not going to mention details here, but this made me think about bees. And I'm wondering if this man is the sachem. I'm guessing not. Sachem doesn't mean chief. I realize that. But anyway, so that's it. We're not going to talk about it. I'm just curious. It's the only other time I've heard about someone high up in a Native American organization being brought and introduced to the king of England. So Grey.
Except for Pocahontas at some point.
Yeah, but that's not in the books.
Not in this
book. Yeah, but we're talking about
that. It's in the books, though.
We're not talking about all history. Fine. Okay, Grey has the delivery. It's a letter from William. William says he had a matter of some delicacy to confide. Boob Salali. He says he's in love with his cousin, Lady Dorothea. Now this...
Oh, what's with all this cousin summer. Loving?
Now this came out of nowhere. Like, so much so that John chokes on his wine. William goes on and on about how his feelings... Goes on and on about how of his feelings for her, and then describes how his feeling for her overpowered him the last time he saw her before he left for America. So what he leaves unsaid is that he deflowered her, basically. That's what he's implying. And Lord John says, "Oh Jesus, tell me you didn't deflower her under a bush, for God's sake."
Rich people just need more connections with other families instead of just continuing to branch upward.
So since Dottie had very recently, I guess, or currently had received another offer of marriage, William felt he must make his move now. He's like, she obviously can't marry the other guy because she's like, you know, she's damaged goods or something to that effect. And smart as he was, John did not believe this. He said he believed Willie meant it, but as a cover for something else. And he said, "What the devil are you up to, Willie?" And he burns after reading. So since
I would have burned
William
that too. I don't want to read that
since
one again.
William was awa, he of course needed to go see Dolly. I don't know who Dolly is. Dottie.
I'm like Dottie. Dalai Lama?
No.
Salvador Dolly?
He's not alive yet.
Dolly the cloned sheep?
She's also not alive yet. With regard to Percy,
fine.
John would have to wait until the powers
Dolly
that
Parton?
Be looked into things. And he'd have to wait. And that he'd have to wait before he saw Hal about Percy as well. And his plans, he also had to wait before he saw Hal with regard to Dottie. His plans were to send a note. I'm guessing it was in regard to making an appointment to see Dottie. And then in the morning, he would visit the Black Chamber.
You know what's really funny about this transition between this chapter and the next chapter? When you listen to it, is that it goes, we'd have to see what happens the next day in the Black Chamber. And then it goes, chapter 17, the Black Chamber.
Like it's so it's like a good place to
the words
to
just
cut.
Keep happening.
I mean, to pause.
Yeah.
Kate O. writes, cue my soft chuckle at my own tastes were harder edged. Yeah, that was John, by the way, you guys. I didn't include that because I don't include everything. But John, John was the reader through. John was seeing John react to someone's looks. And he's like, yeah, my own tastes are harder edged. So John liked a little bit more sculpted. Chiseled cheeks, I guess.
I mean, we know what John likes. It's Jamie.
Oh, fair. That's true. He doesn't much care about the hair color, but he like as far as stature and size and chiseled stuff. Chiseled looks, yes.
I mean, we all care about
no,
size.
So does John. He likes the big guys. The chiseled
I know,
big
I'm
guys.
I'm just saying he's no different than anybody
and
else.
And while I do, Kate continues, while I do make light of Lord John's romantic crush on Jamie, his genuine love for Jamie that really has a root in a deep friendship. Now, you could argue that John took what he could get, but I think that's how it started and not where they currently stand. I think that's true. I mean, I would go with that. She continues, I love the immediate suspicion to Lord John's part. On Lord John's part to Willie's letter, due to how neat it was, extra care had been taken. This can't be good. And then followed by the litany of possible troubling situations he could have gotten himself into. It is such a relatable moment as a parent and truly shows how much of a parent is the person who lovingly raises you. As the child, I don't think you ever understand how many moments varying from unease to panic we inflict on our parents simply by existing.
Panic. Terror? How about bone deep rage?
Oh, I mean,
like there are times when there is very little keeping my child alive except for that very tenuous bond of love. Sometimes that is it.
Kate closes with, I'm sure I've had this thought before, but it was just striking me in the last lines of this chapter how much of a problem solver Lord John is, either by people seeking him out. Jamie does this on many occasions. and just of his own nature. He comes to the forefront as a main character with a distinct point of view so quickly in this book, as opposed to someone with whom Jamie is corresponding.
What's Lord John's birthday?
I have no idea. You had to ask Diana. I don't know.
I'm just wondering what his sign is.
Oh. For Jamie, it's go. Green.
Go? No. Isn't Jamie a Taurus?
I said for Jamie, John's sign is go.
Oh, sorry. I misunderstood you.
Oh.
Check comments and then last. Wrap
okay, tear break. Okay, you guys, again, you don't have to, but I don't got anything after tear break. Oh, Charlotte writes, poor Ian. This must be lagging. Oh, Liz writes, and so begins the Gray family drama. Yes.
Isn't it like 15 through 20? And that was chapter 14. Join us next time when we will be continuing our An Echo in the Bone read-along with chapter 15, The Black Chamber, chapter 16, Unarmed Conflict, chapter 17, We Demons, and chapter 18, entitled Pulling Teeth.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Annabelle E. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you're interested in Outlander Pod branded gear and merch, you can visit our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
It never gets old.
I can't.
Slash shop.
No, I hear it. I hear it now. /shop. Mm-hmm. Is it me? It's been a while. What's next? What do I do?
Sorry. That cackle's going to come out. The group.
And if you're looking for a way to get more Outlander into your life, feel free to join our group at outlanderpod.com/group.
Thank you to those of you who hopped on the live to join us as we did our first ever live recording. If you'd like to be part of a live recording in the future of a read-along episode, join us where Summer told you to go. Join our Facebook group. And thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.